Así como existe gente que crea sin parar, existe la imparable camioneta Ford Maverick que no deja de ganar. Top Pick de Consumer Reports como la mejor camioneta pequeña y camioneta compacta número uno según Motor Trend. Pero la camioneta Ford Maverick no está aquí para presumir. Está diseñada para quienes prefieren crear con sus propias manos y para los que necesitan una camioneta que los ayude a concretar ideas. Así que, eso que estás pensando hacer, llévalo, cárgalo, hazlo con Maverick.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
One in the books, two to go. Plenty more of the big shows. We roll on an FEF Friday. It's Barry, it's Joel, it's Nick, and we are the usual suspects. Before the break, we were talking NFL. We got a little Texans out of the way and then talked a little bit more Ezekiel Elliott. And now Ben wants to talk Zeke. Ben, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? So I hate when I say that. Sorry. Zeke, I want to focus on his case for a second, but something that no one's talking about. Someone needs to sue the NFL Players Association attorneys. They didn't do their due diligence when they agreed to all these things. The personal conduct policy is very broad, and it could be interpreted in many different ways. They give Goodell extreme power. I don't know how they agreed to this. So, and I'm an attorney. I don't like when attorneys sue attorneys, but they didn't do a good job. We complain about all these things. They agreed to it. There's a big problem with how they decide on whether they're going to suspend somebody or not, and the whole process.
But isn't on that on them during the negotiations to do the due diligence of reading through every dotted I and cross T? Yeah, someone's got to go and say, look, we need more control at the end of the day.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They didn't do due diligence. They need to suffer because of it. I'm saying their attorneys who didn't do the due diligence, the NFL Players Association, their attorneys. Not the NFL's attorneys. They did a great job. They got a contract that's very favorable to Goodell and the NFL.
That's what I'm saying. So in the meantime, they can do all the suing they want, but that they're going to have to live with it for the duration of this current agreement.
Oh, no. Absolutely. I'm not saying that they're not working within the rules. They are. They're not violating anything. If you read it, they're doing exactly what they were allowed to do. People try to hold them to a court standard of beyond reasonable doubt or anything like that, it's nonsense. No one's bound by that. Nobody's bound by that except the court system. It's ridiculous. And they agreed to it.
Fair enough.
That's my thought.
You got anything else, Ben?
That's all. That's
okay, buddy. Have a good weekend. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, look, I think we even covered that to some degree, but just said, you know, these negotiations happen every so often and get pretty contentious because of the fact that these are the kind of issues that have to be hashed out and fought through. But it's on you. If you don't do something about it then, you can't bitch about it now.
Yeah, and you agree to it. It's just like, you know, it's like the feeling you get with player contracts, and then they want to renegotiate. It's like, well, you kind of signed up for that, you know? Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love for them to, like, take Carlos Correa, for example. Here's a guy that before he got hurt, top five, top 10 MVP candidate, probably deserves to be making a crap ton more money than he's making. Mm-hmm. But that's the rules that you play by. You're in these contracts and you know you got 3 years of arbitration and this, that, and the other. And unless you're going to renegotiate or stuff like that.
And owners aren't in the business of giving away money.
Nope.
And that's why we were talking about it the other day. I mean, Bryce Harper is the same situation as Correa, but then even if we were talking about Yuli Gurriel the other day. Hard to believe that Yuli Gurriel is considered a rookie, but he's making $10 million a year, and your MVP candidate at second base is, I don't even believe, is he up to over $1 million a year through arbitration? Ooh. Altuve?
Oh, yeah.
Altuve's still on a really favorable contract, though. Yuli Gurriel is making more per year than Altuve.
I'll look it up. Okay. I don't know. I don't have all their contracts memorized, but I can certainly look it up.
Because they've talked about for a couple years now, because of the years that Altuve's put up, that they should rip up that contract and give him a new one. And I just don't think Jim Crane's that kind of guy. He's a businessman.
So Altuve's contract, he is making $4.5 million this year.
What I thought it was under five, but
$6 million next year, $6.5 million in 2019, and he's an unrestricted free agent.
And Yuli's over 10, right?
I don't have Yuli's.
Oh, I thought you had him all up one time.
Nope.
Okay. All right, so we can get to that and then put a bow on baseball. But if you want to talk about, we wrap up football and talk baseball. Your Astros back on the diamond tonight. Keuchel back on the mound. Oakland in town. But again, these are the series that you look at and say, well, they're going to win the division anyway, so Oakland really doesn't matter. But now every game matters again because Boston's in the rearview mirror.
Say again?
Oakland normally, with the lead that you had and the way you were playing, wouldn't be that big of a deal, and it wouldn't be where you have to, you know, it's not like you have to worry about every game now, because now you're in a race. You're not in the divisional race. You're in a race for home field in the American League. And Boston, when you know, up until a week and a half ago, you had a 10 plus game lead. Now they're closing in. It was 5 yesterday in the loss column. Every game even more important now because of the fact that the Red Sox are on your heels. And you want to say, yeah, it'd be great if you had home field. And a lot of people say, oh, it doesn't matter. I really think it does.
I don't know. I said this earlier in the week. I don't buy into the whole home field advantage in baseball as much as I do the other sports. I think it matters in football. I think it matters in basketball more so than in baseball. Teams win all the time in baseball. I mean, you look what the Astros are doing on the road right now. They're a better road team than they are at home. The individual performances have been better on the road than they have. They're 40-21 on the road. They're 34-26 at home. Mm-hmm. They're a better road team, and it has nothing to do with, you know, having or not having home field advantage. I think it just matters with who you're facing and how you're playing.
I think that's the key. I think it's about matchups. I think winning having the best record in the American League, and take everything that you just said, but I think it's more important to say, hey, you could end up playing the wild card winner who probably burned their ace just to win the wild card game.
Yep. Now that series. I do agree with. Now that is something different, but that's not, you know, necessarily having home field advantage versus the Red Sox. Would it be great? Yeah.
I'm just saying, I prefaced it, to have the best record in the American League is important. I think more important to this team than probably any other based on how they're currently constructed. Because of the fact that you would like to see the other team burn their ace to give you somewhat of an advantage going into the series, as opposed to having to take on a Sale right away or a Kluber right away.
Well, that angle, yeah. But you were also mentioning home field. I'm a little bit like, eh.
Well, and I also think from that perspective.
But yeah, I totally agree with you on the ace thing. Getting that wild card team, they've already played a game. They've got to play one extra. Like you said, they got to burn somebody in the staff. They may have to use some of their bullpen. It certainly has the potential to set you up at least in game one. I mean, you're still going to have to win six or three more after that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a 7-game series now.
I also think from home field perspective, I'll stick to that too. The playoffs are totally different than the regular season. And I know what kind of a road team this team has been all year long. But again, when it's ramped up and it's magnified and you're not talking about 17,000 people on a Wednesday night, you're talking about the playoffs when teams really finally have a purpose from a fan base perspective of going crazy. It's a different environment. And if you have the choice of doing one or the other, obviously I think it's more important to have the home game.
Okay. That's fine. Okay. I mean, we can agree to disagree.
Absolutely.
I do think, though, for me, yeah, I want to see these guys winning series. I don't want to see them tank. I don't want to see them, you know, I don't want to see things continue this way. What I'm more concerned about is getting healthy. Mm-hmm. Right now, I really just want to see Dallas Keuchel put two good outings back-to-back. If that happens, I'll feel a whole lot better about this team because I know they get Correa back. I know the offense will turn around. McCullers will come back, and then we'll worry about him. But if Dallas Keuchel can go back-to-back good outings, that'll make me feel a lot better about everything.
There you have it. As it sits right now, Boston 69-51, your Astros 74-47, 4 games in the loss column. But, of course, they have 5 more wins than the Red Sox. So it'll come down to the wire, it looks like. It won't be a start-to-finish cakewalk like the division is, but we'll keep an eye on it for you. And what about the strike zone? We'll talk about that, too. Barry's brought it up a couple times in terms of going to more of an automated strike zone so that you get the calls right. Well, there was a little bit of extra local flavor to that topic after yesterday's game, so we can touch on that a little bit and some of the possibilities that Major League Baseball might be paying attention. That and a whole lot more. Stay with us, the usual suspects on ESPN 97.5.
Are you okay? Would you tell us that you're okay? You're listening.
listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Usual Suspects back in hour number two of the three-hour extravaganza as we continue to roll on.
House cleaning. Guriel, 14-4.
I knew it was over 10.
Yep, 14-4 is his salary.
So as good as he is to know that he's making almost $10 million more than Altuve.
I mean, that's about right. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, but that's what I say, man. It's one of those things where, you know what? These are the rules that you play by.
Yeah.
But I imagine that a lot of those guys, it would have to bother you. We'll put it this way. Let's assume that, we'll just use radio here. Fred and AJ have been the staple on this station longer. I mean, it's one of the longest running duos in sports talk radio in Houston right now. Their show has been together longer. I think, is it the longest? I want to say it's the longest in the city. So let's just assume that they're the big boys, right? And then they go out and get an intern to go full time at 9 o'clock at night. But then that intern is making four times what Fred or AJ makes. Everyone's gonna be like, "What?" But that's what they agreed to get paid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, like I said, when I was looking at that and I kept looking at just, you know, even the fact that, like, it's crazy in one regard just to think, oh, Gurriel's a rookie, but he's not on the rookie salary scale, so he's not dealing with
He's a rookie in MLB service terms.
Yeah.
He's played baseball
but not
for
salary.
He's,
right.
I mean, he's experienced.
Right.
You know what I mean? With Cuba and all that. But
yeah, it's got to bother you. I mean, yep. Look, there's a reason why they renegotiated James Harden's contract after they signed Ryan Anderson to $20 million a year. Because if they didn't, your highest paid player on the roster would have been none other than glorified Matt Bullard, otherwise known as Ryan Anderson, and not the beard. And Harden would have had a problem with that.
By the way, contract notes from Gurriel.
Yeah.
MVP, $100,000 if he comes in first, extra. 50 in second and 25,000 for third. A World Series MVP, 50,000. And Gold Glove, Silver Slugger, All-Star, and LCS MVP, 25 grand. So those are all the kickers in his.
A lot of guys have a lot bigger ones than
of
that.
Of all those, the one that I think would be most likely would be the World Series MVP, because you've seen in the past guys rise to the occasion or they get hot.
Sure.
I mean, you look at like what Colby Rasmus did for the Astros in the playoffs a couple years ago. Guys get hot at the right moment.
The Royals, Perez.
Yeah.
Got it. So, I mean, of course, that, you know, there's obviously a chance for something like that. Even Silver Slugger, simply because if you consider him a first baseman.
Yeah, or, yeah. Okay, so a couple texts and tweets, and then we'll do, I want to do the strike zone thing, yep. But I want to get these out of the way before we run out of them. So on Twitter, somebody asked, who is Polillo replacing? And this was from Craig. And I don't know if he meant like on our show or on 1560. He's not replacing anyone on this network.
Right.
He is getting his own show on 1560. And what's the name of the person, did we say, that he's replaced that show?
Rick Tittle.
Rick Tittle.
He's covering Rick Tittle's show.
He's covering Rick Tittle's show on 1560 from 11 to 1. So that is the answer, technically. I think some people assumed he maybe was taking over for one of us on this show or
Wednesdays or whatever. It's not a local programmer that he's taking over.
Nope. So. It is a national affiliate thing, right?
Sounds like a bad name in a movie, by the way.
Yeah. What?
Tittle.
Does it?
Yeah. Or YA son.
Okay. Brent Shearer said, if someone pulls out a checkbook in the express lane, we're fighting. They can go to hell.
Yeah.
Totally with you on that
one. Good point there.
Totally with you on that. I think that's it. I think that's the majority of what we need to clean up.
And Charlie's going to be doing his show 11 to 1, 1560, but he'll still be making appearances twice
here.
A week here, once with John and Raheel.
Yep, on Wednesdays.
And periodically, I'm sure he'll stop in and
visit the Blitz. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Rocky said, Barry, when are you going to take the orange beating? Well, you guys don't ever forget, do you? I totally forgot about that. I totally forgot that we were supposed to do that today.
The people that wouldn't let
go.
What was the second half of the Coco challenge?
Oh, the legal lean. Did you forget, Nick?
Forget what?
The orange beating thing.
No, I didn't forget. I really didn't feel like we were 100% like confirmed.
I mean, I was gonna do it, but I totally forgot to bring oranges or pillowcase.
No, I forgot. Whatever. I didn't think we were actually gonna do it.
I guess I could use my sock that I have on.
I'll bring it if you want me to.
Well, see, at least one person won't let it go. They really want to hear and see me get
just to make it an all-star weekend for that.
You would like to do that to Clutch the Bear?
Let's just bring that up to freaking OU Mike. So now that we got those out of the way,
yes,
I think the Astros now have lost 13 of 19. They seem to be getting a little agitated.
Okay,
and I'm not trying to guess on this, but I'm just trying to read these quotes. But I don't know if you saw this or not, but after the game, AJ Hinch was a little bit perturbed. And a lot of his ire was directed, or at least to vent, was directed at the strike zone. And during the last at-bat, they rang Marwin Gonzalez out on an outside and low pitch that was borderline at best.
Okay.
And when Hinch got to his press conference, he basically said, "I've always said to worry about yourself, to worry about your team, to compete the best you can. Then you walk out there and you don't have to throw strikes to get someone out. It's ridiculous. I know you're not supposed to talk about the umpires. These guys are good men. But honestly, today, to have the 27th out taken away, we play with 26. It ain't fair. It's not right. It's not fair. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of our guys getting taken to task for knowing the strike zone, and that's not the reason we lost today. That's not the reason that we've had a tough week, but it's garbage when you start getting at-bats taken away from you."
Garbage!
Yes. Now, this goes back to something that we've been talking about in terms of if the ultimate result and the ultimate goal for replay and or the strikes, the automated strike zone, however you want to look at this, is just to make sure you get it right.
Which should be the case.
Right?
It absolutely should be the case to get it right. I don't care. Above all else, I'm not concerned about saving a few umpires' jobs. They're not going to lose their jobs anyway. Bottom line is, if there's rules in place, then you need to make sure that the rules are enforced and everyone abides by and is, given equal treatment under the rules. So when you have umpires that have a loose strike zone, or they're not calling the low strike, they're not calling the high strike, they're giving the outside corner, they're not giving the inside corner, all of that shouldn't matter. It should be, this is the strike zone and this is how you enforce it. And so we've talked about having that computerized, having it automated, so that when a pitch is thrown, they have the technology, they could call it. Well, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, and no one can say it's not topical or it's not getting worse. We talked about Angel Hernandez this week with Ian Kinsler. Now we're talking about it from the perspective of the Astros and AJ Hinch. It's topical, and it's not going away anytime soon. It seems to be surfacing even more.
Yeah.
So it's becoming more of an issue.
Yeah, and they asked Rob Manfred, the MLB commissioner, about it, and this is what he said. He said, "It would be a pretty fundamental change in the game to take away a function that has been performed by our umpiring staff really with phenomenal accuracy. The fact of the matter is they get them right well over 90% of the time. And there is a human aspect to that, a work aspect to it, that's always been an important part of our game. I don't think you can just jump to the conclusion that if you have the technology to do it, that's the right thing for your product." Well, part of the problem is 90% accuracy. Would you be okay with getting 90% of the calls at first okay? Would you be okay with, 90% accuracy is good, sure. But it should be 100% if you have the technology to do it 100% of the time. That's what replay is for, right? In football, they want to make sure that a touchdown is a touchdown 100% of the time. They don't want to leave it up to judgment, so they replay and review every single touchdown. Why wouldn't, if you have the opportunity to get it right every time, why wouldn't you?
I totally agree. And especially in the playoffs. Because in the playoffs, that's when it's really magnified, because one call can make the difference, not just in a game, but in a series or in a team's chance to win it all. And we've seen these things pop up where in the Cardinals-Royals World Series, one call at first base that you're referring to was part of the 10% that they didn't get right.
Right.
And it cost the team the World Series.
By the way, if you just extrapolate numbers, how many pitches do you think occur in a game?
Between the two teams?
Yeah, and so you figure a starter goes five innings and has 100 pitches, right? So if you average...
Between what? 275 and 300?
Okay. So, if you extrapolate the numbers, 10% over a season, 300 pitches in a game times 162 games times 32, and then you multiply that by 10%, that's a lot of missed pitches, like something like 10,000.
Oh, you're my numbers guy. I'm doing it.
I don't even know if that's close. I just made up a number. That's a lot.
By the way, you used extrapolate twice. So you violated your own rule with Charlie Pulillo.
What?
Of big words.
Extrapolate's not a big word.
It's a big word. It sounds like a big word.
He used French, though. You can't go big words, and I'm pretty sure that was French.
That's just part of his je ne sais quoi.
Damn you. Somebody asked or brought up, isn't the playoffs five games? I thought they moved them all to seven, right?
I believe that's crazy. Correct.
I have to look it up. Now you got me second guessing myself.
And the wild card's one game, and then
yeah. But now you got me second guessing myself. I don't remember hell.
It used to be that the divisional series was five,
right,
and then seven. But I think they changed it to all seven. But we'll look it up in the break.
Yeah, I'll validate. But I always thought it was seven. Now that
I got a hankering for some Cowboys and Indians.
Do you?
Yeah. Man.
Well, then we need to go there because it's my new favorite place to eat in town. Joel with the assist right there. I know, I love this place. You guys, if you haven't gone to Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen to eat, do yourself a favor and get out there and check it out. Give them a try. They're located at 1901 Taft in Midtown. Haas and the crew out there do a fantastic job of whipping up some of the best food in this city. It's Southern comfort food. It's Indian food. You can have one. You can have the other. You can have both. I've done both where I've had some butter chicken and I've had chicken fried steak at the same visit. You're going to be surprised at how much you're going to love the infusion of these two foods. They've got a full service bar. You can go there. You can get some drinks, watch the game, you know, snack on something. If you don't feel like sitting down and eating a full dinner, but you're going to want to sit down and eat that dinner. It's all family recipes. Haas has perfected his mom, his grandma, and his aunt's recipes, and he's serving them to you now, and you're going to love them. Best butter chicken in the city of Houston. They have these quesadillas that are made with naan bread that are mwah, to die for. The Himalayan Heat Burger, one of the best in the city, one of the best burgers that you need to go out and try. If you're a big burger junkie like I am, put it on your list and go give it a shot. Wing sliders, don't want that chicken fried steak, get chicken curry or vice versa. Doesn't matter your choice. That's the beauty of Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen. If you don't want to leave, though, and you still want to eat Cowboys and Indians, you can get DoorDash, Uber Eats, or Grubhub to deliver it to your door. It's as easy as that. 1901 Taft in Midtown. Go check them out. You can get more information on Facebook at CNI713. Just search CNI713. Take your taste buds on a delicious journey around the world. Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen. There's nothing like it. And when you go out there, tell Haas and Imran Barry said hello.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Results may vary. Call for details.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Usual Suspects on a Friday. Halftime break over. Ready for the final 90. We head towards the finish line. Did a little homework in the break. Found out we were wrong.
Yeah, five games for the division series. I swear I get confused as to... Because I know recently, who was it that changed from
NBA
five to seven?
NBA, seven.
Yeah.
Yep.
See, this is why you can't rely on my memory. I'm telling you. Somebody would be like, well, like Nick got on me because I forgot what I had said one time. And I'm like, I literally can't remember what I said 2 minutes ago. How am I supposed to be able to remember some of these things? This is why I have to, like, when I do, like, prep for, like, games and stuff, I have to keep my notes... I use Evernote. By the way, it's great if you want a place to like keep all your stuff and keep it in the cloud. It's all technology stuff.
Joel,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, I was going to tell you that I do too, just to get that look on your face. But yeah, I do.
You got a spiral, just some stone tablets.
See, there's like file cabinets and cut and paste notebooks.
Yeah,
and then there's what you're talking about, and I'm somewhere in the middle,
like a stone, like a chisel and a stone
tablet.
You know,
you got a file cabinet, Joel.
Right?
No, I do not.
Right. But yeah, I literally have to pull all that stuff out on a regular basis because I forget. It's amazing that I can actually do my other job, but I have to keep my, at least have a set list on stage with me. The last 2.5 years, I've pretty much done the same order of jokes. I've just swapped out some of the stuff, but I still have to refer to it on stage, which is terrible. But my memory is, well, you know, I mean, my family.
Where do you
family,
put your notes again, though, on stage?
Evernote. Oh, I put them on my phone and then just set it on the stool. No one knows.
Ah, okay. So when you're looking at the stool, you're checking notes?
Sometimes I'm not. It just depends.
But a lot of performers do that. They use either the back of the speaker that sits in the front of the stage.
I always thought there was like a little TV at the bottom, you know what I mean, that they were looking at, kind of like karaoke or something.
Set lists are always taped to the base of the stage.
You'll see sometimes they're taped to the floor.
Yep.
They'll be on the back of a speaker. They'll have in some tapings, they'll have it behind the cameras. In my case, and it depends on who you talk to. Some people think, oh, it's just it's the worst sin in the world to have a set list on there. But then you got some comics that go on stage with an entire notebook and use it. A lot of comics, if you have trouble memorizing stuff or you got a new set, you'll see them walk on stage with a little napkin or something. But I learned with technology that I keep my set list on my phone and I just set it there because I record all my sets anyways on my phone to listen to on the way home.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like film study, right? You learn from the good and the bad. So when you have a bad set, it's good to listen to and see what went wrong. But I'll keep it up there. And then as I'm taking a sip of drink or whatever, I can glance at it and be like, okay, I'm on this pace. And plus my time is right there, so I know if I'm good or not. So. Yeah, that's what we do. Okay, so I did some number crunching, and I'm going to do it live one more time. So 30 teams with 162 games,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, are we saying 300 pitches total, right, per game?
For the game, right.
Okay, so times 300 pitches, that is 1.4 million pitches thrown a year. So essentially, you're talking about 145,800 pitches a year that are called wrong. So in the neighborhood, if you're rounding up, of 146,000 pitches that umpires get wrong every year. That seems like a lot.
Yeah.
That seems like a whole lot. I mean, again, if you're talking about, oh, well, it's one a game, well, then you can do, you know, one times whatever. But yeah, if it, that's just, I don't know. That don't seem right. Am I doing the numbers right? 30, okay. You've got to do it by number of games, right? So you'd have to do half. It's still half. That's still a lot. That's still like 75,000.
At the end of the day, if the objective is to get the calls right.
75,000 would be a lot. Would we agree? 50,000 pitches a year would be a lot to miss, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you want to get down to a number that I think would be acceptable, it'd have to be in the low thousands. If they missed 5,000 pitches in a year, okay, that still seems high in my mind, but when you consider how many are there. But damn, that's still, even 75,000, if my math was wrong and I shouldn't have included both teams and just half of the games, that's crazy, man.
I totally agree. And that's the thing. At the end of the day, you know, the bottom line objective is to get the calls right. I realize it's a little more tedious because of the fact that there's so many calls to make when you're calling balls and strikes based on the numbers that you just extrapolated.
Yep.
But also the fact that people have been, as a hot button recently, trying to speed up the game. And they think that baseball games are too long as it is.
Yeah.
And the first argument that I can see formulating very quickly is, you're going to do that with the strike zone, and it's just going to elongate the game even more.
And the whole thing about it'd be a fundamental change, well, that's fine. I mean, the DH was a fundamental change to baseball, and in my opinion, it made it better. It made it more. I don't want to watch these pitchers go out there and strike out 95% of the time. No one cares about that. So I don't understand why you'd be so opposed. There's replay in baseball now. That's great. That's the first step. But if you have the technology, I mean, if there was a way, and like we use tennis, you brought up tennis before as the example, how the ball, they can just look at it and they know exactly on the court where the ball lands. And if there was a way to automate that in the NFL, you don't think they would? They certainly would do that.
I absolutely think they would. And I think
in the interest of accuracy.
For everybody that says, and you bring up a great argument with the DH as well, but for everybody that says, you know, that from the traditional standpoint of the game, they didn't have replay back in the day. Well, guess what? If they could have back in the day, I'm pretty sure that they would have back in the day if the objectives were still the same, which is to make sure you get the calls right. There's a reason why you up the number of umpires in the postseason and you spread them out all over the place, because now you just don't have that crew around the infield. You've got guys down the lines.
Yeah.
You've got guys all over the place because the objective is, hey, it just got even more important. It's the playoffs. We got to do this right.
Yep.
We got to get the calls right. So if that's the case, then why not concentrate and focus more on achieving that objective in the regular season?
Yeah, and to worry about their, you know, well, it's the umpires, and who cares about their feelings? You still have a home plate umpire. You still have a guy at the plate because he's got to call foul balls. He's got to call, you know, whatever happens at the plate, like did it hit the batter, plays at the plate.
Plays,
I mean, the all
plate,
of that.
Plays at the bases.
You're not costing a guy his job.
Fair foul.
You're taking one of his responsibilities and automating it. And then they went, well, the human error, it adds to the nuance of the game. No, it adds to, like AJ Hinch said, it adds to getting cheated out of an out is what it adds.
That's, how many times, too, do you think when there's a big lead in a game, that the umpire's like, man, let's just get the hell out of here. And
oh,
so
yeah.
They get real egregious with the strike zone. Well, and then look at the Cubs the other day. Lester gave up a 9 spot in the first inning and got a no decision.
Yeah.
Because baseball happens.
Right.
These things, leads are not insurmountable.
And, you know, the other day we had Faye Vincent on and he talked about that. And he was like, well, you know, sometimes they're like, well, if I call that a strike, even though it is, and it didn't look like it, then I've got trouble. Dude, are you serious?
At the end of the day, as long as you got backup by going with what the right call was.
But you eliminate that. Like, then there's no arguing balls and strikes because it's all automated. Go get mad at a computer. Go yell at a laptop, you dummy, because it's automated now. I mean, like, I don't know. That just, these old school guys kind of aggravate me.
I didn't play the dummy card, but I'm with you.
Well, who the hell? I mean, you can't argue with it, right?
No, but we even said that right after we got him on the phone, and we wrapped up.
No, I'm not calling Faye Vincent a dummy, by the way.
Oh,
I'm saying
if
the manager wanted to argue, go argue with a laptop dummy because it's all
that's
automated
what we said,
and 100%
the opposing
accurate.
Team from yeah. where they're sitting thought that was a bad call. You've got the backup right there when you go to the video proof and you go to the automated strike zone to say, well, from your angle, it was a bad call. From my angle, I got the call right.
Yeah.
All right, we continue to move on and progress, not digress, as the case may be. Plenty more to get to on the big show, so if you want to join us, please do, 713-780-3776, HR and P Listener Line. Call or text that number. Or you can hit us up on Twitter. We're available all the time, but especially 1 to 4 p.m., usual suspects right here on ESPN 97.5. Don't believe me, just
watch. Don't believe ESPN. 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Usual Suspects back on an FEF Friday as we continue to roll on. I knew when we started throwing numbers around that the geniuses that we work for every day out there in listener land were going to start getting very specific on the amount of pitches and things like that we were giving out.
Well, it's all right. I messed it up and then corrected it. And then a couple of people corrected the correction. And I was like, no, I think I got it right this time. It's confusing, though, because if you take the number of pitches and we said 300 in a game.
It's a guesstimate at 300.
Yeah, that's true, too. I mean, that would be about right, though.
Sounds about right. I mean, I trusted like you on it. I didn't.
A couple things on the text line before we get these calls in. And one of them was my wife bought me tickets to the game tomorrow. I'm assuming Texans. I've been trying to get excited about it, but not to hurt her feelings. But you guys aren't making it any easier. When we were talking, I guess, with Palillo earlier about the game. Yeah, man. Game two is the one preseason game you definitely don't want to go to.
Three is the one if you're going to have tickets to any of them, but it's still a travesty.
Even then, yeah.
I totally am with – Sean was on it the other day with John – on the kick of, and I totally agree. One, season ticket holders get screwed by having to pay for all for two of those games.
Yep.
Which they don't care about either. And also from the perspective of giving these guys more rest in the regular season, and also because all you're trying to do is set your practice squad and your depth chart, reduce the number of preseason games. I don't even care if you increase the number of regular season games. Just reduce the preseason games to stop the monotony of games people don't care about.
Yeah, because you're risking injury, you're wasting money, you're wasting time. The season could start sooner. I don't know. It just seems
it's a misleading headline, but to that your first example, Patriots lost their top pick practicing against the Texans to an ACL injury. He was their third-round pick because they didn't have a first with all of the Deflategate and other things. But Derek Rivers lost for the season, torn ACL, sprained LCL, rookie defensive end from Youngstown State, did it while practicing with the Texans in West Virginia.
Texans just manhandling them was what I saw.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Because the MVP of that practice had to be the blocking schemes of the special teams of the Texans.
Somebody asked on the text, is it okay to complain to fast food workers because they screwed up your orders? Happened three times, and today was the day I complained to their face. Only complain after you get the food. Yeah, everyone knows they'll spit in it, so don't do that. That's basics.
Yeah, that's coming.
Yep. You want to do Josh?
Sure. I'm afraid I know who it is, and I think you do too, but Josh wants to get in here on umpires. Josh, what's up?
Who is it?
Is this our favorite golf connoisseur?
No.
Oh, that's outstanding. Then, Josh, welcome to the show. We thought you were the regular contributor that is Josh Rapp.
No, I don't know much about golf. So, I was just gonna umpire hate. I think it even goes farther than the missed calls. Like no other sport that I can think of. Maybe soccer. I don't really know. I don't really watch a lot of soccer. But the refs are God. The umps are God. In baseball, and it's ridiculous. Like in the Kansas City game, where they threw out Stroman and then threw out the coach and threw out Russell Martin. Like it's like they can just at any moment change the game, and that's not what the fans paid to go see. We didn't pay to go see an umpire like on his high horse. Like I didn't like the way he looked at me. Like no, that's not what this is. Like this is supposed to be about the superstars that were there to see. So,
dude, I hate
baseball umpires. I think we should go to an automated system. I think we should. I think we should change a lot about baseball, and all the old fogies can just get over it. It needs to change.
Amen. I'm with you, Josh.
It's a great point, Josh. And this is exactly why the NBA instituted replay, because of the Joey Crawford factor. This is the Joey Crawford factor, who thought that he was the show within the show and he was bigger than the game. And you remember the time that he gave Tim Duncan the fake technical, the questionable technical, and then saw Duncan laughing on the bench, so he thought, and tossed him because he didn't like his demeanor and his facial expressions. That's when it's getting a little too much.
And basketball has figured it out, where basketball is all about the superstars. And so that's why they've really been on the come up, because they've made it. I mean, they've put all their power into the superstar. All the players are the ones that have the power in basketball now. And that's why I think it has been doing a lot better. They got that new TV deal. I think it's just, baseball is really stuck in its old ways, and they have all these unwritten rules and all this crap, and they need to just accept the, you know, let's go a little bit with the fun and the chaos and speed this up. Nobody wants to sit there for 3.5 hours. Like, who has 4 hours to just sit there and like, oh, yeah, that was a nail bite. I just hit. It went into the bottom of the 11th. Me and Julie stayed up for it. Like, no, it's not that time anymore. We got to make this go faster. People have the attention span. They can't even sit through 2-hour movies. People need like an hour and a half, and then that's it. ADD is rampant in this country. You got to speed it up.
I'm with you, Josh.
Appreciate it, Josh. Good stuff.
Have a good weekend, man.
Yeah, good stuff there. No doubt, because that's the first thing when he was talking about it. That's the first thing that came to mind was the Joey Crawford syndrome.
I just like that it went, hello, darling.
See?
That's over there. That only took 3 hours and 45 minutes. See, that's not long, is it? It's the American's pastime. It's the American way. We take a long time to do things. See?
People pay for money, and pay for tickets with money, and money, they want things to last. That's why the game lasts longer than normal. See?
Do you want to do, can I do this top 10 list to see what you guys think?
Sure.
Okay. So I've got three top 10 lists that we're going to review over the next hour or so.
Okay.
And they're kind of all related in a way.
Okay.
But we'll start with the so that you'll see the order. You'll kind of catch on here in a minute. But let's start with this top 10. And by the way, this is all from a website called roadsnacks.net. Go figure, I'd be on a place called Road Snacks. These are the top 10 most white trash cities in Texas. All right? The top 10 most white trash cities in Texas. Now, before I read these, What are you, you're already laughing.
I'm laughing because I'm like, well, we could start guessing, but based on Nick calling out the 409, yeah. it's going to get a whole lot of hatred so, if, depending on what we guess.
It's the article this time, not me.
That's right. Let me give you the criteria. This says how we determine the most white trash cities in Texas. Cities where there are lots of white people. That would be a good place to start. Cities where residents are poorer than average. Cities where a high number of residents are high school dropouts. High drug use, higher than average payday loan outlets and dollar stores, violent cities measured in aggravated assaults, and cities with a high number of residents on welfare. So that's how they came up with...
This is how they specified the
white trash cities
in the state?
No, white trash cities in the state. The top 10 white trash cities in the state. Starting with number 10. Corsicana.
Heard of it. Okay. Never been there.
Never been.
Yep. Corsicana is number 10. Number 9. Oh, no. I lost my my list here. Number 9 is Stephenville. Okay?
Okay.
Number 8, Texas City.
Really?
Yes. Number 7, Plainview. Number 6, Brownwood. Number 5, Vider.
I was going to guess
Vider
that.
Had to be
I really would have thought that was going to be a lot higher.
Yeah, I did
I'll be
too.
Honest with you. I thought Vider. Number 4, Greenville. Number 3 is going to shock the hell out of you. Dallas.
Nobody disappointed
Suck
by that.
Dallas.
That's right.
Number 2, Texarkana. Although you kind of have to give them some slack because they can't help that half of their city is Arkansas.
Arkansas, right.
Yeah. And the number 1 white trashiest city in Texas is Lufkin.
Over there by Nacogdoches.
Yes. Yeah. Lufkin is your number 1 there.
I was going to cringe if Houston was higher than Dallas after we made fun of them.
No. I wouldn't have done that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so that's your 10 white trash the top 10 white trash cities in the state. Now, coming up, we'll have your top 10 most ghetto cities in Texas.
Will you have the
we'll have the criteria for
okay.
that.
All right.
And then we can either do, I'll give you dealer's choice. We can either do the top 10 poorest cities in Texas, which I think is probably just taking the first two lists, white trash and ghetto, and combining them. Or we can do the top 10 dumbest cities in Texas.
I'd like to hear the criteria alone for dumbest.
Okay.
So I would go that route.
All right. So there you go. We'll have those coming up as well.
Skip, we see you. Thanks for stopping in, and we'll get to you in just a second. We're going to step away for a quick break. 2 hours in the books. 1 hour left to go to the big show. We'll get Skip in here. We'll get some top 10 lists in here. We'll get you set for your weekend. Don't go anywhere. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.